Hello and welcome to the official Leverage Redemption After Show,
a very distinctive podcast. I'm Felicia Michelle.
I'm Yael Teagle, and this is the big rig job.
Big rig, like choo-choo, like not choo-choo, but beep-beep.
Yeah, beep-beep, not choo-choo.
Well, either way.
Last season was choo-choo.
So this season is
beep-beep.
Okay, got
it. Toot-toot.
Let's go toot-toot into the studio.
Yeah, and learn some truck sounds.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, Felicia, it's the holidays. This is our big holiday episode. How did you feel about this episode?
I mean, if it starts off, if Parker's on stilts, I'm here for it. Anytime that she's ready to go and she's doing her thing, she loves this time of year. I mean, I know Christmas is not your favorite. I love Christmas. I'm not like a crazy like candy cane wearing lady, but I do like the holidays. I like the feeling that it brings about that I enjoy. And I love the childlike of Parker. I love that about her personality, and she loves this holiday. So
you're totally right. Although I'm not a big fan of this holiday, I do love Parker's excitement for it, and I love her joy. So seeing her do the decoration on the stilts, seeing her light that tree so blindingly bright was incredible. And then the distinctive Santa hats she made for each person was so beautiful.
It's so cute. Don't you just, it's like the little tradition, and it just kind of reinforces again how much of a family our team is around this time. So love it.
Yeah. I think that is a wonderful, wonderful thing that happens in this time. It's the best we're going to get out of me. But I do love the story this week. Hashtag Page Boss. I want to make it a thing now, even though my name is not Paige.
Paige Boss.
Hashtag Paige Boss.
Hashtag Paige Boss. So anytime you say something that's like sassy or bossy, you just hashtag Paige Boss. You have to whisper it too. You like can't.
Oh, I have to whisper.
Yeah, I feel like it makes it more effective. Like people listen better when you whisper.
I don't know that I'm capable of whispering.
I don't think you are either.
But I did really enjoy the story of this episode. We have this trucking company run by a man named Nick. He seems real Santa-y. And he's got these two kids and they are taking over his company. I absolutely enjoyed this idea of this woman who was like, I was forced to inherit this company and all I'm going to do about it is try to make my social media brand.
I mean, get it how you live. It makes sense because it's like, it's kind of like old school versus new school, right? It's like old school. It's like, you know, it's a family business and you go into the family business and you keep this like legacy thing going. And
sure.
Like, new school is very much like social media. It's very, you know, kind of like self-centric and very much like, okay, what's going on in my world? I'll show you that. And so she's like, oh, if I can use this to leverage that, that's what I'll do. But like actually run the business.
Right.
Phooey.
Yeah. I honestly, I think that was my favorite part of these bad guys. Like, yes, they're terrible. And yes, they're running guns in their trucks. And yes, they are indebted to the mafia. But like, sure. But her attempt at being a social media influencer, especially because Brianna points out that she has 36 followers. Like, ma'am, I wish you luck, but it's not going to happen.
It starts one at a time.
Hashtag Paige Boss.
Hashtag Paige Boss. You don't want one of those handbags for Christmas?
Honestly, the handbags were not that bad.
Yeah.
Although, you know me, I like a big purse. That's too small. Yeah. That's too small for me.
Like, I can't fit my clip in here. So
I can't even fit my phone in there. It seemed real small. But actually, my favorite part of this job was seeing Sophie and Janice bond, right? So, as we learn, Janice and Nick, they had nothing official on paper, but they were together. Yeah. And it was such a really great moment to see Janice and Sophie have this conversation about family and about loss and about continuing the legacy of the person you love alive. And to have that all result in the end with them bringing the toys to the kids was beautiful. I mean, we know that the team's going to save Christmas.
Yeah.
They are Santa's little helpers. They are going to save Christmas. There's no doubt about it.
I think they're like more like Santa's little gangsters. Like, I want to say, like, Santa's little helpers sounds really sweet. These are still badass criminals, you know, like former criminals.
Right.
So, you know, but yeah, I say Santa's little gangsters.
And speaking of badass criminals, right, to see the way that they track down when Brianna's stuck in the truck is so... It's so them, right? To see Parker explain to her how to, you got to smell, tell us what you smell, and then them identifying what that smell is, and then using the trucks and Janice and the dispatch to catch it. Everything about it was just so deliberate and clever. And that's why we love this team, is because they are so smart. And of course, you know, we love the action.
I mean, hello, that's what we're here for.
That is what we're here for. So seeing Elliot jump from the food truck onto the truck, that was incredible.
I think about that a lot because, you know, Christian really does like almost all of this himself, and he's a madman, and I can't imagine, like, I can imagine him be like, let me do it again, I'm gonna do it again, I'm gonna do it one more time, like, what? No, like, even the first time I'd be too scared.
I think the part where Harry asks him, like, what happens if you miss, and he's like, then you do it, I was like, ooh, yeah, no, that's a good call. Yeah, if Elliot's gonna do it, because if Elliot doesn't do it, who's gonna do it? Who's gonna save Brianna? Who's gonna get the truck to stop? No one. Elliot
only.
And I mean, we always laugh about his hair flips, but...
And punches.
But the hair flips when he was on the truck, because it was hair in his face. It made sense.
Look, and you have to, like, flick it out of the way. So I don't, you know, it goes along with it. You're trying to fight. You need to see. You're flicking it out the way while your fists are moving and you're flying and jumping across tops of trucks.
Right.
You know, just the normal stuff. Just normal stuff like that.
Yeah. I want to know, you know... I know you like Christmas a lot.
I do.
And our team was trying to, I guess, not really celebrate together this year. You know, Harry was supposed to be going with his daughter to go snowboarding. And Parker and Brianna were going to go to Nana's. And everyone was going to separate, but ended up together. What did you think about...
It's going to sound so nerdy, but whatever. It's like this theory is like quantum entanglement, and it's basically like people who are constantly always together, they just gel. Like, there was no way they were going to be pulled apart at that time. Like, whether they thought that they were going to do that or not, like, that was nice, but there was no possible way, because any time that any of them senses even a little bit that the other might need them, maybe, even when the help is refused sometimes, they're always there for each other. So there wasn't going to be, like, an instant where they weren't going to be together on a day like Christmas. Like,
right.
Whatever. I mean, you can stop at Nana's and all of them, but, you know, where you end the night is what matters.
Absolutely. And I love you bringing in your nerdness.
It's yeah.
Age of the Geek, baby.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they say.
That is what they say.
I think it's fancy. Head women in charge.
Yes, the reality show. Oh my goodness. And the Jamies. This is a moment that I've been waiting for all season, because we got a little tease about the Jamies early on, and so to finally see them in practice. What did you think about this pair, their laughter, their quantum entanglement?
I mean, a reality show indeed. Reality show indeed.
When Beth and Noah, as the Jamies, were doing their interview with Paige, I love the way that they use the light to blind her. Because, you know, when you're standing in front of the lights, you don't see anything behind you. And so to then have Parker, you know, digging in that safe and pulling out the books and finding out what was really going on. And the truth is, although this was a story about trucking, this is very much inspired by, you know, car sharing apps and the way that those abuse their contractors and employees.
Oh, are you talking about anybody that might have class action lawsuits against them for multiple things?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a moment, I don't even remember the line, but somebody's like, it's Uber bad. And I was like, huh, that's so subtle.
that's what makes the show really great, because it's based in some level of realism, mm-hmm. what we actually experience, see, and what's in our news cycles. So it made sense.
It did make sense. And I like the way that we tell this story, and in the end, they save the day. And we get our truck back, we get Janice in charge of the company, and we get the toys to the kids.
And everyone got personalized little Santa hats.
Yeah. There's still so much more to tell everybody and to show them about this episode.
Yes.
So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You've got to see this. Come on, come on, come on.
I am sitting down with the director of The Big Rig Job, Milena Govich. Hello, Milena.
Hey.
I want to ask, because, you know, I know you as an actor, and I know that you've also directed other things. How did you get involved with Leverage Redemption?
One of the producers had known of my work from another job that I did, and he asked to meet, and we had a conversation. I had watched some episodes, and it really came out of that meeting that I was lucky enough to get the gig to come down to New Orleans and do two of these. I really found the show incredibly appealing because I've directed, as I sort of mentioned, a lot of big action television shows, many of which are very serious, and you know, they the stakes are high and they take themselves very seriously. And often when I'm on those sets, I'm a little bit more of a goofy person naturally. So half the time I'm like, oh my God, look at that. Wouldn't it be funny if he just jumped off that car? Oh, that'd be so funny. Yeah, no, we're not doing that. But then I come to this show and I'm like, oh my God, wouldn't it be great if he just climbed all the way up and started running across? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, oh, we get to do that silly stuff here. Oh my gosh, what fun. So that was a real treat for me to get to come do this.
So tell me about coming to the show as kind of the new kid in school.
Well, it's interesting because Leverage is such a family, and, you know, almost everybody came from the original series. They've all known each other for many, many years and have very much a shorthand. So coming in, I did a lot of research. I watched all the episodes from season one. I was, of course, familiar with the show from the original version as well. So I did a lot of my own research to prepare. But when I got there, everyone was so awesome and so warm. And the actors were all really excited. I was like, oh, I'm just fresh blood here for you guys to tear apart, right? And they're like, no, we're going to have so much fun. So they were all very generous. And people were bringing their A game in every department.
Tis the season. This is the Christmas episode. Tell me about directing the holidays in, I assume, not December.
Yes, you assume correctly. We were filming everybody in sweaters and jackets and hats in July in New Orleans. So it was quite soupy down there at that point in time. But at the same time, I think it's always super fun to be able to work on a holiday episode, because it just gives it so much specificity and you can really lean into those more, the more fun and celebratory elements. Obviously with Parker's character loving Christmas so much, it was just, I mean, Christmas threw up all over everything in the, in the headquarters set, as you saw.
Tell me about that. We have Parker on stilts. To like put up the decorations, which surprised me because I feel like she would go the other way. Like instead of climbing up, she would come from the top down.
It's mostly because we've never seen Parker on stilts. You know, we've seen her belay down from the ceiling or whatever and do that kind of a thing. And I think that is what you might expect because she's done that before. But we thought, well, what would be more fun and unique? So when that idea was presented, I was like, oh, yes, yes, and yes, please. but it was Beth tricky because those stilts are really tall.
Yeah. Does Beth have experience on stilts?
No. And in fact, we did some movie magic on that. And there's actually her stunt double, who's named Brooklyn, was actually the one in the big wide shots. She was the one on the stilts because we still had to rig her to the ceiling for safety reasons. Technically, she was hanging, but also walking around on the stilts. And it was quite complicated. Even her stunt double had never done anything like that. But it found it very challenging. So we sort of cheated some camera angles. So it wasn't actually Beth on the 8 foot stilts, but we had a lot of fun playing that gag and also like
Yeah.
decorating them like candy canes and stuff. I mean, there's
Yeah,
nothing more fun.
I am shocked to discover that that was not Beth, because it very much camera angles, movie magic looked like her up there.
Yep.
I really love how much Parker loves the holidays and how like she really did, you know, we've got the tree lighting up and it being blinding. How did you do
Yeah.
that?
Well, it was a lighting effect plus some split screen work plus some help from our friends in the visual effects department. But then when we shot the angles of our of everybody reacting, going, oh, that was really just us on the set with a big giant light putting it up in their faces. So we were torturing the actors, basically.
They loved it. They loved it.
Yeah.
I also know this episode had some really incredible stunts on the trucks, right? We have Elliot climb out of a truck and jump onto a truck and then walk on the truck. How much of this was Christian Kane? Because I know that he does not like to let anybody do his stunts. And how much was him?
Just about everything on there was him. We did have to do some movie magic for the jump itself, going vehicle to vehicle. But that's him jumping. So, he is as phenomenal at all that stunt work as he claims to be. I'm here to tell you. But yeah, we did shoot it in pieces, and we had a rig that was on a green screen. We also had a rig that was actually driving. We had the food truck chasing it. Like any of those big wide shots where you see the toy truck being followed by a food truck and then the charger that comes through. All of that we shot on location with cameras and drones. It was really, really fun.
That's amazing. Is this your first time directing this kind of action?
I've never done a vehicle to vehicle jump before, but I have directed a lot of action television shows with big stunt work and car chases and gunfire and all that fun stuff. So, all the big toys. I've been lucky enough to get to do that.
Do you prefer to direct the stunt stuff or the like more serious scenes? Because we also got this like really beautiful Sophie Janis moment.
You know what? I love it all. I love doing projects that have a range like that. Where that's one of the reasons why I love this show so much. You can have a giant Christian Crane action sequence and then come and have this really intimate heart to heart with two characters, sharing their struggles. And as a actor myself, I love working on those scenes. It's a very different schedule for the day when you're doing, some intimate dialogue scenes versus jumping around and chasing cars. But being able to do both in one episode is a real treat.
Yeah, I know that. So I know that you are an actor. I've seen you on other things. But also, our show tends to have a few of our actors have directed. Why do you think actors make such great directors?
Well, being a director is all about telling the story. And I find as an actor who's leading a set in the position of a director, it's really about leading all of these experts around me to tell the best version of the story. So I'm the keeper of the vision, right? Of how we're going to execute a great script, how we're going to make things compelling and exciting. And I think actors are very sensitive and we listen well because that is a main part of our job. And I think most of us are inherently good communicators because, again, that's our job is to communicate ideas, emotions, thoughts. And when you can communicate well with a fantastic team like the one that's in New Orleans working on Leverage, you can get the best out of people. And I find so much joy in that inherent collaboration, and we actors love that.
I always love to hear stories about actors who get to direct and then learn something about acting from the directing. Is there anything you picked up on this that you were like, oh, this is the thing I could implement when I'm acting?
One thing that I just had the most fun doing was the Jamie characters in this episode that
Yes.
Noah and Beth did. Oh my goodness, I was so inspired by watching them just inhabit these kooky, wacky characters and to just go for it every time and just try stuff. And, you know, whether it worked or didn't, they just kept going. And of course, I mean, most of it all worked because they are genius comedic actors, both of them. But yeah, just as far as what I would take away for my own acting would just to have the fearlessness to be ridiculous and have fun doing it.
I mean, this episode really does have so much, right? Like you've got the goofiness of the Jamies, you've got the action on the trucks, you've got Brianna sciencing in the back of the truck, we've got Christmas happening. This episode, I feel like it's not missing a moment, right? We're not missing a single thing in this episode.
True. I would tend to agree.
Right. Let's talk about Brianna sciencing, because I assume we didn't start actual fires in the back of the truck.
Actually, no, there were some practical elements to the fire. A lot of visual effects work is at its best when there's something practical in camera for them to build on. So even having a spark, having a lighter spark, that then they can enhance that rather than like building it from scratch. Sometimes you do have to build fire elements from scratch. It's harder and not as easy to make it look seamless. But no, we actually did use some practical fire effects. They were small, but we can enhance with smoke, and then the visual effects can make the fire look a little bigger. But most of the smoke was all practical that our special effects department pumped in. It's not smoke from a flame, it's smoke from a smoke machine.
Did she set that purse on fire? And
Yeah,
did you
they
take a purse
treated the
home?
purse. Well, I actually did take three purses home. I have one in every color because I thought
Nice.
they were hilarious.
Amazing.
Yes, the purse itself is not actually immediately flammable. We'll just say that there was again some movie magic on that. So treated it with some I don't know what the chemical was that they put on it, but so that it would light on fire a little bit, and then again in post they could enhance
Nice.
it.
How many purses did she set on fire?
So, just the one for the actual fire gig.
Okay. I mean, I feel like she would want it to be like, I gotta try it again. I gotta set another purse on fire.
And I also have to shout out Nadine Haters, the costume designer. She is such an inspiration to me. She has so much creativity. And in that preparation process on both of the episodes, like she came with these phenomenal ideas that really helped elucidate and elevate the characters, frankly. And I owe her a ton for that. She was just so much fun to collaborate with.
Any chance we'll get to see you acting in season three?
Oh, I don't know. You should call Dean.
I will. Oh, I will. Fun fact, Nick in this episode was played by the construction coordinator of Leverage Redemption, Chris Cato. Let's check out him and Randall Groves talking about making this set.
I'm Randall Groves. I'm the production designer for Leverage Redemption.
I'm Chris Cato. I'm the construction coordinator. I take his vision and take it from 2D to 3D. With his design, I take it and I build it.
I was a builder. I did the same thing Chris did, construction coordinator. And I would go to school at night at UCLA and took an art direction course at the extension program. So I'd build sets during the day in Los Angeles, go to these art direction classes at night. And Electric Entertainment gave me the opportunity to move up. I was a construction coordinator for them, a builder, and they saw some promise in me and gave me an opportunity, and I've flourished ever since.
I got a phone call from this gentleman in January of 2020, and got a good vibe talking to him. And the pandemic hit, and we waited 6 months or so before we started work. And yeah, and it's been a good ride. I really enjoy it. You know, it's you get up in the morning, you show up at work, you lay out today's task and you know, your goals for the day, what you want accomplished. You know, you try to stay ahead of the game and stay on task. You know, when you're filming, it's kind of the same thing. You know, you take care of camera first and You try to stay ahead of camera as far as you can, and you know, never let camera wait.
Art department never holds up the camera, ever. Yeah. That's rule one.
Yeah.
So a lot of long days.
And so far we have.
A lot of weekends. His crew, which he has, you know, at any given time, 40 to 60 people under his department. They work, you know, 40 days straight to get the set up and, you know, the time that we need to do it. No weekends off, you know, we definitely are the little gnomes that come in the night, you know, and the Keebler elves.
Yes.
You know.
People show up with camera and they're like, oh, there's a set.
Yeah.
You know, and we were toiling in the background.
But we even fool the production people sometimes, you know, like we'll be somewhere and they'll be like in a location and we've taken an empty vessel and turned it into a, you know, golden goose, you know, and they'll be like, oh, this isn't real. You know,
yeah.
We're able to fool them sometimes. There's a family element. A lot of us have been together for many, many, many years. And, you know, we've seen kids grow up, you know, from little tots to graduating college this year. A number of kids on the crew, or, you know, the crew members' kids are, you know, so the family aspect, the familiarity, the secondhand nature of what we can get done without speaking and just knowing the process, the people.
Absolutely. In that phone call in January of 2020, he told me that the guy that signs my paycheck is going to know me by name after week two. And he was dead on. There is a family atmosphere here. And,
yeah.
And it makes it very enjoyable. Yeah. Very enjoyable.
And Dean and Electric Entertainment, it's unique. It's a unique company in this industry. I've worked for, it's my 33rd year. I started in 1989 on a movie with River Phoenix called Dogfight. I was made $75 a day as a carpenter's helper. And so now all these years later, I've worked with a lot of different companies, a lot of different people. And yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely.
Really, really lucky that Dean Devlin and Electric has made a home for all of us. You know.
Yes, absolutely.
We had the best time in NOLA, and y'all got to talk to Nadine Haters about how she turned Parker and Harry into the Jamies. Check it out.
They were called the Jamies. They both had the same name. Well, Casely made the suits. They are 100% Casely made.
It takes about 48 straight hours to build one suit really quickly. So 5 days for the jackets and the pants and the ties.
It was a big ask on episodic TV. We moved so fast. And at one point we almost abandoned ship because it was like, is it too much? Is it too much to ask for Casely to do? But Casely being the craftsperson
it was worth it. Once they got into costume, they were just bouncing around. They were just happy as can be, like playing off each other and how to integrate the costumes into their performance.
We talked through all of the design elements together and kind of come up with a plan, and then she gets to work. But the fittings were really fun because we did fit them at the same time so that we could line everything up. And it was pretty intense, the first fitting. The trailers are tiny and there's like six of us in there trying to figure out. That was our first check fit.
We're using gaff tape to line up the stripes and then, you know, translating that to the actual fabric.
Parker was driving, so we had to build. It really was so mathematical trying to figure out how to do everything, because we had to line everything up, not only because of the height differential, but whatever they were doing in the scene, they always stood side by side. So if they were on the move, they also had to be lined, that we, you know, the whole idea was to keep them lined up.
Think we have all we need. Don't call us, we'll call you.
We heard from some people that you were part of the discussion for characters that you got to play and how deep those characters were, that like Harry went into these characters like the Jamies, for example, and really you got to say like, let's turn it up.
you know, maybe that's a byproduct of directing a couple of them where you just, you're in a position of making decisions that, you know, black or white, white, you know, left or right, left. Like, it, there may be a right or wrong, but you don't have time to really make a decision. You just have to make a decision, and then you'll course correct if it was the wrong one. And then you get on the other side where you're just acting, and you kind of miss that level of high pressure engagement on all levels of your brain. And so when they wrote the Jamies, Beth and I were both not directing that week. So we had a lot of extra energy to look at each other and go, what if we did this? I don't know. What if we did that? What if we talk like that? What if we, yeah. So we got very creative in the one area where we had control.
Yeah. I mean, those, the Jamies are, iconic.
Oh, yeah.
They're iconic now. They're going to live on forever.
Right on.
I look forward to seeing people in Halloween costumes as the Jamies.
Oh, man, that would make me so happy. That would be so, that would be full circle. Well, 80% of the Jamies is Nadine Hayter's costume. You know, she had this inspiration. She saw some fabulous suit on some trend-setting individual in a magazine and thought, I'm not only making one of those, I'm making two of them, and I'm going to make them so if you put them next to each other, they look like this, and if you walk, it'll look like this. And she had this whole image. And it's not often that the costume designer dictates your performance. But in this one, she had such a specific idea that Beth and I were like, okay, let's do it.
Just last season, archives, that's how many costumes we do. So they each have a whole section of archival things from last season. And then all of this stuff is what we've started this season so far. So like this is two episodes right here.
Oh my goodness, it's the Spirits Roost t-shirt. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ah, this is the best day ever.
God, it's so easy. So easy to make it the best day ever. Oh.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. That's so cute.
Can I hug you? Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh.
Why are you so giddy and where have you been all day? I've been looking for you.
Okay, I've been honing my inner Parker.
An event?
Not an event. I broke into the costuming department and I got a Spirits Roost t-shirt.
Thank you. Oh my God, this is so freaking cool.
Tis the season, and Yael is getting fa-la-la info about this episode with Machina Bellman. Check it out.
In the big rig job, when she talks to Janice about the Christmas truck and keeping this toy drive going, and she says this beautiful thing about knowing a woman who took care of a family and then pushed them away so they wouldn't make a fuss, but they kept pushing back. And then she says, because that's what love is.
Yeah. You're giving me chills.
You gave me chills. You're the one who said it. It was so beautiful.
I think there's a bit of a theme through this season of her kind of redefining love, because, you know, last season she lost her life partner. She was grieving that. She thought that, yeah, they were going to grow old together. So this season, even though she's, you know, confident, she's full steam ahead and she's thrown off her widow weeds, she's trying to reconfigure what love is. And I think that it's a really interesting arc in that way. There's a lot of, you know, I was trying to be a caniac in my episode with, you know, in the Christmas truck episode when I played the dispatcher. We were like, okay, we're going to give a little nod to the caniacs here. And then I loved wearing that costume so much. In fact, I kept the t-shirt. I was wearing it yesterday, but I was like, yeah, this is my ode to the caniac. It is fun doing these little personal references.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many great ones. I feel like I look forward to talking to Nadine about Keith David and dressing him like Elliot, because when they have that fight scene together, I was like, they're wearing the same thing. It's so cute.
Oh my God, that was crazy that night. They were shooting that fight scene in a parking lot, and then Noah and I were shooting a completely different scene just across the street. So we had two sets working in tandem. So every time we would do a take on our scene, and then they would go cut, and then they would go action on the parking lot across the street, and you would suddenly see Keith and Christian take down all these guys, and then they would go cut, and then they would come back to us and go action, and then we would go in and do our scene. That was the one where I was playing the reporter.
Who was that?
That was fun.
Who was that imitating?
You know what? That was another one. It just said reporter on the page. And I thought, well, that's a bit boring. I've got to create somebody. And that came together with the costume. That costume I did, I went to my fitting and Nadine had that three-piece suit, that linen suit, the waistcoat, the jacket, the pants. She had that on the rail. And as soon as I put that on, I was like, I think she's got a deep voice. And then I was like, and she used to smoke so she doesn't smoke anymore, but she's always got a Bic pen in her mouth. And I think it just all happens very quickly. It sounds a lot now that we're talking about it, but yeah, that was a funny night that night when they were doing that. He's a sweetheart. I mean, we all fell in love with Keith. He's a character and wonderful actor.
Check out this interview with co-creator of Leverage Redemption, Mr. John Rogers.
We got over 100 episodes now of Leverage. This season we hit 100 episodes.
Yes, we did. Actually, Chris Downey gets to feed me cake. For those who don't know, back in the day, the traditional toast when you were a TV writer when I was coming up because of the length of seasons was, here's to episode 100, with the idea that being 5 seasons, you're in syndication. And back on the old show, Chris once went to episode 100. I went, we're never going to get there. We're making 13 to 15 a year. Nobody ever gets the 7 seasons on cable anymore. Tragically, you know, and even though, like I said, we ended where I think we ended, so we should end it, so great. Chris said, we will make episode 100. I said, if we make episode 100, you can feed me the episode 100 cake, like at a wedding. And then we hit it. And now Chris is like, are we going to do a photo for the fans? Are we just going to make a cake? Will it be a cupcake? I'm seeing him today, actually. This will come up yet again.
It's going to happen on the after show. Decision made.
When does he get to jam the episode 100 cake in my face? Because I was wrong. I think the theme of all my appearances on this show is me admitting I was wrong in some way.
I mean, if that's the theme, that's the theme.
Yeah.
I love it. Let's also talk about the Elliot backstory that gets presented.
You know what's funny? I fought that. That's how you know, by the way, I'm not in charge of the show, because I probably would have stopped that episode. I wouldn't have. But like, I would have fought it so hard that it would have been too annoying to actually make. And by the way, you look shocked, but you know, we've talked about this. Every year, Chris Downey and I would make our list of like 5 favorite and 5 least favorite. Like the things we, and not episodes we hated, but like, oh, I think that worked, or I think that didn't work. Not only, as the two guys who created the show, who sat this close to each other for 5 years, were the lists always different, at least 2 from each other's top were on the other's bottom, and at least 2 from the other's bottom were in the other's top. So there's just always a sense of, like, you know, sometimes fans think there's one voice in a show, and there's actually about 5. And you know, for that, it was another great thing about me not being in charge of the show anymore. Because I'm like, I don't really think we should do Elliot's backstory. Every time you do Elliot's backstory, it strips away a little bit of the mystery. And I watched the episode. I'm like, watching Elliot kick ass with his dad is actually awesome. Like, I was wrong. I am fully invested in this episode. The fracking problem, the actual crime that we do is great. Everybody's response is great. Elliot's scenes are great with his dad. I was wrong.
At first, I like you wrong. That's funny. Yeah. Also, I think that hilariously or very, very smartly, the show introduces all of this stuff and goes, we're going to explain this to you, but we're also going to give you 50 more questions.
Oh,
and just leave it there.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And by the way, full credit, that was Christian Kane. He was like, I think Elliot's dad is black. Years ago. And we're like, okay, filed. Like, we'll keep that in mind as we write the character that he's informed by. He's completely anti-racist because he was raised actually by black adoptive parents. He said that first run of the show, maybe, I think. And then coming up to pay it off. So there's also the thing where it's like, you have to listen to the actors, their internal voice, what they're looking for. But yeah, it raises a lot of questions once you know that's not his birth family. Like, where is Elliot's birth family? What drove him? What was the actual path in his career? You know. But that's a good revelation, does that. A bad revelation closes doors. A good revelation opens a door and you realize, oh, there's like 5 other doors in here now.
Yeah.
Which one do I go through? I don't know, man. You're the fans. Enjoy. I gave you doors.
Awesome.
I mean, does he have, like, was there another adopted twin who's now working in the Philippines somewhere? I don't know. It's entirely possible. I'm sure there's fanfic out there for that. Would one of the triplets wind up as a librarian somewhere? I don't know. It's up to you. Go nuts. It's your Tumblr.
You just opened the door to all these fans. They are now doing that.
I assure you I did not open that door. I assure you I am 1,000 fix behind on that concept.
That's so wild. I feel like there's so much in that family that we barely scratch the surface.
There is a stepsister out there, like there that we've never met, you know, that we mentioned once in passing in the first show, and then it was who he was texting with to try to get together with his dad in the first
bucket
show.
Job.
Yeah, yeah, and so, you know, that's the thing. There's other members of that family out there. But by the way, do we need to go back to that family? I don't know. Do we want to explore other elements of Elliot's past? I don't know. That's for next year's writers to figure out. Fingers crossed.
This season, you know, we're diving into Sophie. We're diving into Elliot. We know a little bit about Brianna and Hardison. And I know that we bring up Nana a few times.
Yeah.
But we have yet to meet Nana.
Who could you cast as Nana that would be satisfying? Like, what actor could you drop that is built up could play the myth of Nana that we have built up to this level? You know what? If we find the right story, 100%.
Shore Agdashlu would be great.
Yes, actually, she'd be pretty amazing. she'd actually be perfect. But that's the thing. It's like, you have to find the story. You have to find the emotional story that makes sense. And then you kind of go, in my path, it's like, you find the emotional story you want to do. Find the plot that serves it. And well, it looks like we have to use backstory for this one. And then you go reaching into the backstory as one of the struts. You don't start from, let's talk about something from backstory, or let's talk about, you know, you start from the what you care about. Yeah. And if Nana winds up being one of the things we care about, awesome.
We asked you to caption some photos on Instagram, and here are some of our favorites. Check it out.
Thanks so much for watching. Be sure to follow us on all social media platforms at After Leverage.
And we'll be back next week to talk about the Turkish prisoner job. We have writer Chris Downey joining us and so much more, so don't miss it. Until next time, I'm Yael Teagle.
I'm Felicia Michelle.
And this has been a very distinctive podcast.